Welcome to Unsquish the Fish.
Unsquish the Fish.
The podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff.
Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
That's right, Dolphin fans. Another episode coming for you here. I got Lewis Sung from Fin Maniacs. What's going on, Lewis?
Not much, Ron. I'm ready to go. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about the defense, man. We're going to talk about what the defense... Well, we know what the defense looks like now. We're going to talk about what we want the defense to look like and how we think we should get it there. We'll start with a little bit about what would your strategy plan be to improve the defense? What would mine be? You know, I'll let you talk first. You had just mentioned a little something about Jalen Smith, for instance, and his knee injury. So I'll let you kind of start there and what your thoughts are on him.
All right. So the whole thing with Jalen Smith is it's really very simple. It's a gamble, 50-50 chance, or probably a little more along the lines of maybe it's more like a 60-40 if we want to be perfectly honest. The injury that Jalen Smith suffered, according to reports, is something along the lines of what Marcus Lattimore dealt with, like nerve damage. The knee will never really be what it once was, and there's always that risk that Jalen Smith may never play again. But with that in mind, you have to consider the possibility that, first of all, he's not a running back. Marcus Lattimore was supposedly this generational talent that, if he recovered, could be an awesome player, but he's still a running back. And considering how running backs are disvalued in the league now, it doesn't really mean much in the long run unless you're Adrian Peterson or now Todd Gurley. So that's the once in a generation like talent. Now then, for Jalen Smith, however, linebackers are I'd say it's higher on the totem pole for importance on football teams. I've always said that the linebacker core are the core of the defense, because, I mean, you can talk about pass rushing, that's fine. You can talk about the secondary all you want, but if your team has really bad linebackers, then your defensive line and your secondary needs to be perfect, because they don't have any extra support in the middle where a lot of the stuff goes on anyway.
We learned that, I mean, just to interrupt just for a second, we learned that last year. We thought last year, oh, if your D-line is sick, they'll help out the linebackers. All they got to do is just tackle when every now and then a guy gets out. That was all a bunch of crap, right? I mean, that wasn't the case. We got crushed because we had bad linebacking play.
Right, and pretty much every team. I can't think of a team that has really bad linebackers and their defense is still stifling. I mean, Denver's linebackers aren't superstars or anything. Danny Trevathan and those guys, they're not like stars, but they're still serviceable enough that the Miami Dolphins and other teams, not just Miami, is looking to maybe see if they can bring Trevathan in. So with that in mind, that means that they are at least serviceable starting linebackers. Not exactly what I would want on the Dolphins defense, but they could do the job, I think, adequately. But here's the other thing. The thing with Jalen Smith is, are you willing to take the risk that he may or may not recover? This is the eternal problem with the Miami Dolphins and even the NFL and all the teams in the NFL in general. Some teams are willing to make that gamble. San Francisco made a gamble on Marcus Lattimore, and they lost. Jalen Smith is a first-round talent linebacker. For a while, he was the top linebacker in the whole draft. Like, he was ahead of Reggie Ragland, he was ahead of Miles Jack, he was ahead of all those guys that everybody's so high on right now. And the only reason that he has dropped so low now is because of that knee injury. If the reports are true that there's nerve damage and he may never play again and all that other stuff, everybody's like, oh, we feel so sorry for Jalen Smith, he'll never play again. Well, we don't know that yet. We know how the NFL works. Stranger things have happened. We saw Lewis Delmas come back from an injury that was supposed to keep him out of the league for 9 months. Within 3 months, he was running on his leg again. So, if you have this freak of nature type of player, they can recover faster than someone may think. Like, all these people, Cameron Wake, he's posting pictures of himself training again. He's saying that we're going to be back. You see Jason Taylor saying, I would never bet against Cameron Wake. We're all excited that Cam Wake – people are talking like Cameron Wake is already going to be back to being Cameron Wake again. So what even is the – only a few people out there who are still saying, well, he may not return. Everybody's pretty much saying that he will return. So, and that's off an Achilles tear in the age of 34. So if Jalen Smith, a young buck who just came out of college, there's still the possibility he could recover. And now teams have taken him off the draft board. But if Jalen Smith does recover and say Miami or another team gets him at what, fifth, sixth round, that means they will have taken two first rounders for that whole 2016 draft. See, if that now, if you're willing to take that risk, then you have, and if he does recover, you've won. If he doesn't recover, well, you took a chance, you didn't win. Is it really going to make or break your whole franchise? If you win, you would make the franchise. If you lose, well, I mean, you used a fifth or sixth rounder on him. How many of those picks even pan out to begin with?
For Miami, so, not a lot.
Well, for any team, man, like any team, it's like fifth, sixth, seventh rounders. I mean, there's a reason they go that low.
Yes, that for sure. What I don't like about it is taking another linebacker out of play kind of heightens the value a little bit of all the other linebackers that would have gone after him. And linebacker is an important position for Miami, because I got to be honest with you, I've said now for a month that we need to go linebacker. We have got to figure this linebacker thing out. We need to draft linebacker. And I'm not saying I've changed my mind, but I'm starting to feel like Miami is going to go defensive end. They're going to let OV ride, and they're going to go defensive end. And I'm starting to wonder, even if they don't let OV ride, will they go defensive end just to replace Wake? And I'm starting to feel like, you know, that means linebacker in the second round. And now each one of those guys kind of got bumped up a notch if Jalen Smith is just coming off people's boards. Agree or disagree?
No, it's a legitimate concern. However, we can't act like pass rusher is not a need for the Dolphins right now. It's pros and cons. The linebacker stock is pretty good in this draft. I mean, even if you don't get one of the premier guys like Jack and Ragland and those guys in the first round or even late in the first round, you can still get guys like Antonio Morrison. I think he's with the Florida Gators.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could get
he's a lower round guy. He's like a fourth round guy or something.
But he has talent. It's just like, ironically enough, again, an injury is keeping him off low on some boards. So, and then you have Scooby Wright. Some people really like him. And then you have these other guys.
Kentrell Brothers, Darren Lee. I mean, yeah, there's names. Deion Jones, who's really small. You know, I mean, I know there's names. I'm just saying, if you're targeting Kentrell Brothers or Scooby Wright, if you're thinking that way as Miami, that we're going to, you know, we'll definitely get that guy in the second round where we're picking. Now with Jalen Smith gone, maybe teams get a little bit more desperate for linebacker and they sneak your pick away. I mean, you never know what's going to happen anyway. It's just for me, like in my mental plan of how Miami should start to try and rebuild this defense from, I won't say from scratch, but nearly from scratch. It just makes me a little bit more, it makes me a little nervous. That's all, you know, that's really all it is for me. So maybe we get lucky and Miles Jack drops to us, but now I think that's less likely because people, again, they're like, ooh, linebacker, I'm not letting Miles Jack fall away from me. There's no Jalen Smith to be had. And it's just, you know, it just gets a little tougher at the linebacker spot in the draft now because of this.
Yeah, and it would be tougher, but I mean, let's be real about this here. Pass rusher is also a serious concern for Miami. Like, again, you brought
Agreed.
It up. Cam
Agreed.
Cam Wake's getting old. Olivier Vernon may not come back. Derek Shelby is a free agent. Like, pretty much the only defensive end we currently have on contract is Terrence Fidet. And apparently he was so bad that he couldn't even get on the field once the new coaching staff came in. They were not impressed with Mr. Fidet. So with that in mind, pass rusher is a must unless you're not going to keep Cam Wake. So if you are going to keep Wake, then you are essentially saying that we're going to invest in a couple more years of Wake, which means we need to draft somebody who we can count on right now. We have some really good pass rushers up at the top of the draft. Noah Spence, he can work in a 4-3 if he must, and then there's the 3-4 transition that has to be made that there's a lot of speculation about that. As soon as the personnel comes, then we're going to switch over to a 3-4.
Hearing that the only reason Vance Joseph is going with 4-3 is because that's what suits Miami right now. As soon as he could get the right outside pass rushing type linebackers to go 3-4, he's going to go, you know, he's going to try to go 3-4, at least more of a hybrid like some teams do.
Yeah, and the 4-3 is so Ndamukong Suh can do things for Cameron Wake to still remain his defensive end, staying involved in that sort of thing. But in a 4-3-4, Wake would have to go and cover a little bit, and he can't do that anymore. We already know that he can't do that. He's pure pass rusher at this point.
Yeah, now he had one of his best seasons about, what, five seasons ago? He had one of his best seasons as an outside linebacker in a 3-4, but again, 5 seasons ago, pre-Achilles injury, you know, 30 years old plus, so... I agree with you. He's not the same guy, so I don't think just because he did it then means he'd be able to do it right now.
And when you say he's not the same guy, we're just referring to, like, his other skills have diminished. He's still an elite pass rusher in the NFL.
Yeah, he still has that. It's just everything else that you would need to do at that position, he's just not quite as good as he used to be.
Right.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah, but his skill as a pass rusher is still incredibly valuable, and that's why I'm keeping him. But you still need somebody that you can count on going forward, because Cam Wake, with all due respect to his freak of nature-ish, he's still not going to be able to keep playing forever. I think it was John Abraham. He played until he was like 36 and was able to be productive. So If we're lucky with Wake, we'll maybe get 2 more years out of him, maybe 3. I don't know, because he played in the CFL. He doesn't have as much wear and tear on his body.
Yes.
But if you get somebody like Noah Spence, or maybe even a DeForest Buckner, there are some people really high on him. There are some really low on him. Two people I respect are like opposite views on Buckner. So that's like, who do I listen to here? I personally think that Buckner's way of pushing and shoving people out of the way is it's intriguing to me. It's a little different than the whole speed rusher. I can only get to the quarterback really fast. I can't stop the run type of a deal. I think that if he could bump inside if he absolutely needed to, which is actually very good for us, since we don't really have a whole lot of DTs right now, right, either. So if Buckner is the pick at 8, and you get somebody like Antonio Morrison or somebody like that in the second round, and then you can take a flyer, maybe, and see what happens with Jalen Smith. Maybe see if he's still there in the 5th or even the 6th round, because people are worried about his knee. Is he ever going to come back? If you take that flyer and he does come back, then you have taken care of, assuming whoever you got in the 2nd round works out. That means you have got 2 out of the 3 linebacker positions taken care of. And the 3rd one supposedly is already taken care of because you drafted because Jelani Jenkins is still on contract. And he's good enough that if you put 2 studs next to him, he will become a stud in his own right, because he's got 2 guys there supporting him. Add that with Ndamukong Suh, then you have Wake on the other, and then you have Wake for 1 more year. You have Buckner on the other side, or whoever's there. And then, of course, you can draft a cornerback in the 2017 draft, because there's always going to be someone there. Like, even if it is like the world's smallest midget argument, that doesn't mean that the player is not going to be good.
Understood. Now, if we, let's say we franchise OV, just franchise him and don't sign him, do you still draft defensive end? I think I would.
Well, if I'm franchise tagging OV, it's because I want to see if maybe his value drops.
I agree.
Let's say he has a bad season and he's going to have to command less cash, because $15 million for 1 year is a bigger risk than taking Jalen Smith in the 5th round. That's a lot of money you're paying for a 1 year rental. So with that in mind, I would still be willing to draft the defensive end, knowing that OV is not going to stick around forever. Maybe we would give more time to develop this young guy and see what he could do. What role would he fit best in, given the defense they currently have? So if you're going to do that, then I would still keep a very close eye on the linebacker position, because again, even if Wake and OV and all those guys come back, we already know that the linebackers in place are not going to cut it. So that has to change, and it has to change in a hurry. So linebacker at some point has to be addressed. They need to stop beating around the bush and address that linebacker spot, because until that happens, we all thought that Grimes and all these guys are going to be able to make all things good in the secondary. Like Rashad is still a stud, but Rashad is currently the best linebacker we have on the team, and he's a safety. So that tells a lot about what the problem is here.
Yeah, he was pretty much kind of having to play linebacker. They were having to keep him up just because the linebacker play was so poor in the season. Which, I mean, wasn't a bad idea, but it's a shame that they put themselves in that position and sold to us and themselves that Kelvin Shepard and whatnot was going to make it, and Misi would be back, and all the things that didn't happen, and we know how that all ended up.
I'm probably in the minority with this, but I think Cole Misi was actually better at middle linebacker than he was at the outside this year. That doesn't mean he was great, but he was better.
I just think he was better a couple years ago. I felt like a couple years ago he was just better when he had, you know, it's kind of like the argument with Jenkins that you just made. When Koemisi was playing alongside of Dansby and Burnett, he was good. When you made him, oh, you're the guy now and everyone else around you sucks, he sucked too. I mean, that's just exactly what happened with him. He needs to be, like you said with Jenkins, the same thing. He needs to be around a stud or two, and then that elevates his play because they kind of hide what he isn't good at, I suppose.
Here's the other thing, though, with Koemisi, just specifically Koemisi. If the Dolphins do switch to a 3-4, that means they could turn Koemisi back into an edge rusher. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason this is intriguing is because I'm sure barely anybody even remembers this anymore because of how many times he's been moved over. But Koemisi was actually a pass rusher in college.
Yeah, in Utah. Correct, so, right? Yeah, he played in Utah.
I would love to see what would happen if Koemisi got to do what he was actually drafted to do in the first place.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just a curiosity.
I agree, because if I recall correctly, wasn't it Utah? I mean, we're going years back now. When Utah played Bama in the Sugar Bowl, and didn't Koemisi give him some hell in that game? If I recall correctly,
I would have to look it up.
And I remember specifically that Sean Smith picked off Bama three times in that game. We have a tendency, used to at least have a tendency to be able to pick off some pretty good defensive talent. From Utah.
Them.
Yeah, and then, misuse them and send them off on their own. But I'm thinking that the way I'm feeling right now is I was leaning towards we got to get linebacker and cornerback in these first couple rounds in whatever order I was fine. Now I'm kind of leaning towards we've got to get defensive end and linebacker in these first couple rounds in whatever order. I mean, you've got 25, 26 guys that grade out first or second rounders just from the defensive line. That's including tackle and tackle and defensive end. You got 25, 26 guys draftable as first or second rounders just from the defensive line. If you include pass rushing outside linebackers, and you got 16 guys like that are graded up in the top 100 just at the defensive tackle position. So knowing that, and considering we just spent a second round pick on Jordan Phillips, do we try and draft another defensive tackle? Are you just going to let's see what happened with Jordan Phillips and kind of let that ride until maybe a deeper round or even not draft a defensive tackle at all this year?
Well, if we draft Buckner, then we could actually bump him inside and see what he does at defensive tackle. And then we could play with him at defensive end because sometimes he played inside, sometimes he played outside, I believe, if I'm remembering his college tape correctly. So Buckner is something of a hybrid in the way he plays, so that would be an interesting compromise.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just talking purely defensive tackle, then I would have to lean towards no, because I think Phillips can be good. He still has some work to do though in stopping the run. Like his ability, I mean, again, man, his ability is not run stopping. Like, I think maybe that's the problem with the Dolphins in general. Like, you didn't have anybody who could stop the run. Like, and I'm not going to blame Ndamukong Suh for doing what he did, because I mean, I think Ndamukong Suh was incredible, but he is a pass rushing defensive tackle. He's not there to stuff the run. There were a lot of times when Ndamukong Suh penetrated the line so fast that the running back actually ran past him.
Yes.
Like, if he had just been a little slower in getting past his guy, he might've been able to bump into the dude. But it's like, Sue was so fast getting to the quarterback that he got run right past by the running back. And again, that's not his fault. I mean, his job is to get past his dude. So I can't really blame him for letting the running back run past him, because he got to the quarterback so quickly that he let the other guy run by.
Yeah, I get it. I agree. I think I'm with you. We could just skip out on not drafting a defensive tackle or not even drafting one very high, although there are some talented ones in here. I mean, we could end up regretting that decision, but I'm not a big fan of Jordan Phillips yet, but I think he was only a rookie and you got to give him at least another season. I mean, Solei took how many years to really show us that he could do something? I think it took like three.
I think it was like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it was like third or fourth season until finally, like, oh, there he is. And, you know, they didn't give up on him. and that worked out. Now that isn't always going to happen, but you're not going to be able to rebuild this defense all in 1 year. That's for sure.
Huh.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and see if you agree with this. When a team, and you know, obviously Miami's in this situation, when a team has the situation where they have so many holes on defense, and I'm not going to say on offense because offense is different. It's so dependent sometimes on one position, quarterback. So we're going to kind of not. I don't think this is necessarily the case for offense if a team just has zero skill players. But if a team is absolutely wiped clean, just about beyond a couple players, like we are on defense. Don't you think that when a team has the opportunity to really focus on rebuilding a defense, especially trying to do it through the draft, not trying to go and sign five free agents, except to maybe fill a gap here and there just so you can have some kind of competitive team that year, that's the kind of thing where if you did it right and you really hit on 3, 4, 5 players, like that's the kind of thing that can build a ridiculously good defense. If you did it right. But the only chance you're ever really going to do that right is when you focus really hard on the defensive side for like a couple drafts in a row. I think Miami has an opportunity to do that. When Jimmy Johnson came in, he did that. He was like, wow, this defense sucks. I'm drafting this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And he spent a couple years really drafting. He added a little free agency here and there. He made a trade for this one guy. And before you knew it, they really had a ridiculously good defense. I think Seattle, when Pete Carroll came in, he did the same thing. He's like, man, this defense is hosed. I got to get this figured out. So he focused really hard on defense. And before you know it, he had a lot of bright, shining stars before the end of their first contracts, you know, the Legion of Boom. Obviously, I'm nervous about who's making these decisions, but here's an opportunity for Miami to do something really special over the next couple of years with this defense because they have to focus on it so much. What say you about that, Lewis?
Yeah, I totally get you, man. And like, and if you're now, you mentioned being worried about who was in charge of making those decisions. I personally feel like that in just like, and I'm sure everybody's going to be mad at me for this because I've had many people get mad at me over not condemning Mike Tannenbaum and already saying that, oh, well, his reputation in New York, that's all we need to know. That not necessarily. I mean, look at his track record with defensive players. Like Mike Tannenbaum, when he drafted defense, there were a few players that he really did hit on, and even to this day are still stalwarts of their defense. I mean, His first year he drafted Darrell Revis, and that worked out really well. David Harris is a main member of their defense. Even to this day, he's still their top middle inside linebacker.
Yes,
and he's been in there ever since he was drafted. So that was a really big hit. And then you have Quinton Culpepper. Well, a lot of people say he was misused. He was a 4-3 defensive end who got bumped over in the 3-4, so that wasn't really so much Tannenbaum as it was Rex Ryan's scheme. And I guess maybe Tannenbaum and Rex had that little argument. I don't know what I don't really know what happened or whose fault it was that Culpepper didn't work out, but Culpepper had talent. It's not like he was a bust to begin with. I mean, Culpepper still did pretty good even though he was miscast. He just didn't do enough to warrant the first round contract money.
Understood.
So that's, yeah. So, and with that in mind, I mean, there's more to it than just that. You have other guys there. Tannenbaum has drafted, he drafted Nick Mangold and I don't know who the other guy is anymore. I can't remember. It was DeBrickashaw Ferguson. That's him.
Okay.
Like, that's on the offensive line. So Tannenbaum has made some hits. Every team has their busts. It's not like it's, oh, well, it's Tannenbaum, everybody's going to suck. I mean, even the great Ozzie Newsome, and even now, even today, like, there are a lot of people questioning what Ozzie is doing. Like, right now, the Baltimore Ravens are currently over the cap by $2-point-something million, so that makes cuts and a Joe Flacco extension crucial to their offseason plans. So, hooray, Ozzie Newsome, you did it. You made the Ravens win one Super Bowl in the past, I think it was 2012 they won, and that was with Ray Lewis carrying the team with his pretty much just his heart and will. So, and after that, they've been, whatever, who cares? They made it to the playoffs once, and then Tom Brady beat them in the last minutes. So, hooray, they got to the playoffs. And last year, I think they were worse than Miami. I'm not sure about that, but.
Yeah, I know we beat them. We beat them anyway.
Injuries took them out, but it's like, yeah, every team has injuries. Like, nobody wants to make excuses for Miami with injuries. Well, then you can't make excuses for Baltimore. Sorry. Can't have it both ways.
That's true. That's true. Now, do you agree with me on the fact that when a team can focus this hard on the next on one side of the ball, which they're going to have to do for two drafts, it's going to take two drafts before they even start to maybe feel comfortable. That's when a special defense can be built.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, look at the Seahawks. I mean, if that's the model you want to use, pretty much all of their defensive players were homegrown talents. Now, keeping them all is going to be pretty much impossible. I mean, I don't know if Richard Sherman already got a contract extension. I don't think he did, so he's still on his rookie deal. So then so if that's the case, then you're going to wind up paying a lot of money to Richard Sherman. You had to pay I think it was Cam Chancellor, the dude who didn't want to play anymore because he was holding out for a new deal or something.
Yes.
So you're going to have to find a way to pay him. You had to find a way to keep Russell Wilson. Marshawn Lynch is retired, so I guess that's some money down, but now you don't have Marshawn Lynch. So you're paying a lot of money to keep your guys in there, and eventually and last year the Legion of Boom kind of flattened out a little bit. So
no, it did. But I'm not even really referring. I mean, yeah, that's the other end of it. That's when you're coming out of it. I'm talking about more the excitement of coming into it when you've got these guys on their rookie deals and you've hit hard on some 4, 5, 6 defensive players and you kind of put that around Sue. And I'm talking when a defense really blossoms. How long does it take for you go into a couple drafts and you've got, you know, 6 to 8 picks per draft, depending on what's going on, or more or less, but usually at least that. And out of these, say 15 picks, you draft 11 defensive players. You know what I mean? And you marry that with some guys that you have, and there you go. All of a sudden, if you hit right, out of 11 defensive players, if you can really like nail half of them, say, like, let's say you nail your first round picks, that's kind of a must, and you do really good in the second and third rounds on at least one of the drafts, you hit, you know, a second and third, and then one on a second or a third, and one guy ends up busting out. I mean it can happen. It can happen quick when you and we're in a situation where we really don't have a choice. Like, we have 7 picks this year, correct? Or am I wrong on that?
I think it's 7 picks, and that's just because, and it's one pick for each. One pick for Burr.
And I can almost promise you, out of those 7 picks, unless something weird happens where they lose some picks, gain some picks, out of those 7 picks, we're going to draft 5 defensive players. You know?
Yeah. If you can hit on that, but again, that requires a lot of luck on the part of the team doing that kind of drafting, because to be able to have that kind of ratio, you have to really, really be good at scouting. And not only that, you have to have like an elite coaching staff there to work with those guys, because a lot of those guys you're drafting are developmental players. I mean, they're not ready for the NFL yet. Because there was a quote the other day I saw, and it really hit me that is like, yeah, I've been saying that for a while. It was something along the lines of, college athletes are better than they ever have been before, but the fundamental principles of football are the worst they've ever been. So essentially, that is the philosophy that I've recently been feeling about college football for a long time now. You have all these freak athletes coming out balling like it's nothing else, just based on their athleticism alone. And then when they come in the NFL and they realize, oh crap, it's not enough, then that's when you start getting busts. Like Deion Jordan, like he was a pretty good potential player at Oregon, and then when he got to the NFL, he just kind of fell off the map because he couldn't handle, I don't know, maybe he couldn't handle the pressure and he just kind of went on a drug trip, I don't know. But it's like they realize this is bigger than anything they've ever dealt with before, and they were not prepared for it. Like, people say Alabama is a problem because the players you draft from Alabama, they're already peaked out because Nick Saban coached them that way. That's why that Alabama has been so good for such a long time. It's not just the fact that all good players want to go to Alabama to be good. It's that they know that they're going to be coached to be prepared for the NFL. Like, the Alabama players, most of them are NFL ready. Like, whatever you see at Alabama, that's what you're going to see at the NFL level.
that's the scary thing. It's that it's essentially an NFL team in the college level.
Yes.
That's a little, maybe it's a little bit of exaggeration, but I would say that that's a pretty safe comparison right now. So you have to hit on those guys, but you have to be willing and ready to deal with the reality that these college players are not NFL ready. You have to teach them how to play in the NFL, because that's essentially saying, look, whatever you knew in college, give it up, because we are going to have to teach you all over again because they didn't teach you squat.
Yeah, understood. Now, I'm talking about building this defense and seeing it blossom in 3 or 4 seasons, like in 3 seasons from now. So 2018 is when you start to see what this defense really looks like. That's really what I'm talking about.
Well, you would have to be really it only blossoms if you hit on those guys.
Exactly.
So that's an iffy situation. And by then, and by 2018, we may be looking for a new quarterback. So at that point, it's like, do we really want to just look at the defense only? Because again, quarterback, as much as I don't like to talk about it anymore because I'm tired of talking about the quarterback, the reality of the situation is that unless Tannehill becomes elite in 1 or 2 years, 2 at the most, we're going to be looking for a new quarterback, and then we have to start the offensive struggle all over again.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Question for you. You listen to a Big O show ever on 560?
Never.
You never do. You do know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know who he is. Okay. I don't agree with him a lot of the time. Even Matt took him on the other day and was like, yeah, Matt, you won. He won't say you won, but you won.
What, he called in? Matt called in or something?
No, he didn't call in the show, but he was on Twitter or something on the lines of, well, he's like, Matt tweeted something along the lines of, when was the last time that he responded to something Big O said, and he said, when was the last time a front office/scout person was ever that highly hyped? And then Big O answered that, oh yeah, because nobody made a big deal about Al Saunders coming in, shaking my head, #SMH. And then Matt, without even thinking twice, pretty much put that, except Al Saunders was on the coaching staff, he wasn't a front office or a scout person. So,
yeah.
So there you go.
I heard Big O say, and I was bored, and I have a long drive to work this morning, so I listened to Friday's show because I listen to it off and on. So I was listening to Friday's show, and he mentioned that if this was Green Bay, so if Mike Tannenbaum was Ted Thompson or Bill Belichick or Ozzie Newsome, he would trust him to go ahead and just let OV go, because we know that if we keep him on and we sign him, we're likely overpaying, and draft somebody. But he doesn't think that Miami should do that because he doesn't trust Miami to make the correct decision on the draft, to let go talent that you know is good, not amazing, but good, to go try and get better talent that's cheaper. He doesn't trust him to do that, so he says we shouldn't do that. We should just sign OV. My point on that is, if it's what Ted Thompson or Bill Belichick or Ozzie Newsome would do, that's what we should be doing. And if the people who do it make bad decisions, then they just need to get fired, and we get other people to do it. But we shouldn't be sitting there because, you know, if I'm Mike Tannenbaum, well, I know I'm not as good as Bill Belichick, so I'll just keep this guy because I don't think I can go get somebody better. That's bullcrap. Just let him do it. I want him to do it in the mold that it should be done. And I'm not going to sit there and tell you what should be done is OV should go, but I'm just saying if that's what those guys would do, then that's what we should do, and not keep them because we don't think we trust ourselves to find the right guy. Now, I don't blame Big O for saying it because the track record ain't great, but I disagree with the philosophy on that. What do you think Miami should do, honestly?
Well, are you talking about signing OV or just
with
the
OV,
whole idea?
We've both talked about what we think will happen, but are we really talking about our own opinion, your opinion, my opinion on what we would do if we were Mike Tannenbaum? What would we do? Do we sign OV for more than he's worth? Do we just go ahead and tag him? Do we transition tag him? Do we just let him walk? Now, those are really your 4 options, honestly, him.
Honestly, I would transition tag him. I mean, let's look at it this way. Charles Clay, did we really think he was going to be able to stay in Miami? Like, I was hopeful for a long time, like, maybe he'll stay. But then when I heard all the things that Buffalo was working on, making this crazy deal that he was going to – there was making an offer he couldn't refuse. Well, Charles Clay took the offer he couldn't refuse, and now Buffalo is wondering, oh,
kinda, what are we going to do with his contract?
Buffalo pretty much, I won't say that busted their cap because they do have Mario Williams, but Buffalo pretty much pushed their cap to the max for a tight end who is just decent. But tight end's a little different, and I will explain to you why my opinion is that tight end is different. Number one, right now, the way the NFL game is played, a tight end that you can spread out wide and throw the ball to is really important. And if you start to look around the NFL, there are less and less and less guys that can even think about doing it. And the proof in the pudding is, like, right now, there are two tight ends in the top 75. PFF had a top 75 free agent list that they kicked out a week or two ago. Gates and Dwayne Allen are the only two in there. Gates is like 80 years old. Dwayne Allen, I don't even know if he's any good. You know what I mean? We haven't really seen. That's it. And then if you look at the draft, you got what? Hooper and what's his name? Hunter Henry or something like that? Henry Hunter? Like a one first round guy. Look at what the contract that Zach Ertz got. That dude has caught 9 total touchdowns in 3 years. He got $42 million. So I kind of understand a little bit why Buffalo did it. But again, they busted their cap for an average decent tight end. That's it. I don't know if the OV thing really correlates. It may be different because there's a lot more ability, especially in this draft, to go out and get the guy. So I don't know. It may be smart to transition tag him. I think I might agree with you on that, Lewis.
I'll transition tag him and make him stay one more year, and then we can maybe see if we can work on another deal that would be more team-friendly. I don't think OV's going to take something like that. But the way I see it at this point is that if you're going to lose him, make whoever takes him pay for it. Like, be the jerk. I don't even care anymore. Being a nice guy isn't so. Baltimore is so great because they're jerks, and New England is so great because they're a bunch of jerks, and maybe Miami needs to be a jerk. I hate the sound of that, and really it is. And really, that's why I think I don't want to say it, but it really feels like I think that's why Omar likes them so much, is because they're jerks. They'll punch you in the face and they won't apologize for it. So if that's what it takes, then go ahead, transition tag him and make whoever takes Olivier Vernon from us pay for it.
So who sets the price when it, because I don't actually know this. I understand how the transition tag works. It kind of gives you a chance to like match the offer. But who sets the price? Is it just whatever the other, whatever one team, the highest bidder bids?
Yeah, I think that's how it works. Yeah, it's whoever, I believe that it's whoever, like there's a set number on the transition tag. I don't know what the number is for Olivier Vernon, but if another team gives a higher offer and then Miami has the option to match it, and Olivier Vernon would have to take that same offer and play for Miami.
All right, so it pretty much gets them a chance to match the highest offer, so it kind of helps set value. But the problem with Charles Clay is they could have probably signed Charles Clay for less than that, because Charles Clay wouldn't have guessed, and his agents probably wouldn't have guessed that a Buffalo or any team was going to go offer that much for him.
No, I think Buffalo would have offered them a similar deal, but I think Buffalo only made that contract the way it is because of the tag being on him in the first place. They really wanted Charles Clay, and they made him an offer he couldn't refuse. So, I mean, I don't know why. Maybe he just wanted to chase the money. I'm not going to begrudge the man going after his money. He only has so much NFL to play. So.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't blame Charles Clay for this at all. It's between Buffalo and Miami. Charles Clay's got to go get his cash. I never blamed him for that. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, he got overpaid, but take the money. I would take it if somebody offered me a bunch of money that more than I thought I was worth. I would take it. I'll be honest with you. I'd be like, no, I'm not worth that. Give me less. No one does that. That's not how life works. So
I would transition tag OV and see who, and make sure that pretty much. Like, I'm going to be the jerk here, I hate to use that word, but really it is. That's what it is. It's like, the only reason I'm putting tag on is because I don't give a crap, and I'm going to make whoever takes you pay for it big time. I'm going to make them hurt. So, and if OB goes, then that means that it's possible that a compensatory pick happens in 2017, assuming that the Dolphins don't make another big splash in free agency. Somebody with the same amount of the same amount of cash, the same amount of whatever. I'm not exactly sure how the compensatory pick system works, but I believe is that if you lose a marquee free agent like the Lions did with Ndamukong Suh, and they don't bring in anybody who can
kind of replace equal that. Yeah.
Yeah. Then they can get a third round or fourth round pick in the next upcoming draft. So if Miami loses OV and doesn't replace him with somebody of equal,
they probably
equal
get like
value.
That'd be like a fourth round compensatory pick.
Third or fourth.
Sue's going to be a third rounder, assuming that Detroit is going to be eligible for that, because I didn't pay attention to what they did in the offseason last year.
Yeah, but Detroit is getting a third. Detroit's getting a.
They'll get a third rounder.
Detroit's getting an extra. Detroit's getting another pick.
This season, sure. Coming yes. up. Yeah. Have they even announced the compensatory picks yet? I don't think they have.
I don't think they have, but I went over and I did some studying and I saw a graph that's pretty much said that they're going to get another pick. So it's a difficult system, and I don't think it was ever really explained. So, but it was just like over the years of observation, people have tried to piece together exactly how the compensatory pick system works. And I think it's more about value than the actual skill of the player. Like Ndamukong Suh was making this much money or whatever, and he was this valuable and whatever. So if you don't get somebody who's equal to that, then you can get a draft pick in return.
Yeah. And the only thing I know about it is the highest you can get is a third. That's about all I know.
That's the highest you get.
Yeah, definitely. So then what is your opinion? They transition tag. What's OV going out the door for per year? What do you think?
The stories are that since the franchise tag is $15 million, that's the floor that OV is looking for. Now, if I'm a team, I'm looking at OV and looking like, are you crazy? Because even J.J. Watt is – that's J.J. Watt type money. That's Mario Williams type money. And with all due respect to Olivier Vernon, he's not even up to Cam Wake standards. And he would be making like Cam Wake is making right now. So – and we're looking to make a pay cut on Cameron Wake. So it's like, I'm sorry. You're not worth that. So either he's going to have to realize that either a team is going to be absolutely crazy like Jacksonville or Oakland, and they're going to bring him in for that much, or he's going to have to wait around for a while and lower his price, because that is an insane amount of cash for somebody who's really not worth that kind of money. J.J. Watt makes like $17 million a year. OV is not getting 15.
Yeah, I would agree, but teams like Jacksonville and Oakland mess things up because they have so much money and they have a 3-year floor they have to spend at eventually. There is a floor there. It's just like a 3-year rollover floor where there are times where they just have to spend money to spend it because they have to hit this floor. So that kind of changes things, especially if you go and throw a transition tag on something. A couple of teams like that, and especially a team like Jacksonville or Oakland, who Oakland kind of starting to feel, and those Oakland fans are getting a little cocky, starting to feel like they're closer than they may really be. But if you got all that money, you know, they may decide to do it. The problem is they got some really good players right now that are on their rookie deals that if you're giving OV a ton of money in 2-3 years, and then you go to try and sign Derek Carr for $100 million and Khalil Mack for $65 million or whatever it is, and Cooper for $80 million. Good luck with that. You know what I mean? So it's something for them to think about. But if they have to hit the floor, they have to hit the floor. Might as well go get a guy like OV, make their team even better. So my prediction is if we transition tag him, he's gone. That's personally what I think.
Then so be it. I mean, then we made whoever paid for him make him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Yeah, exactly. So then I say for sure, let's draft defensive end in the first round because there's some nice ones to be had.
Sounds like a plan to me.
But what if Miles Jack drops to us? Do you still go defensive end?
Oh, dude, I hate you for asking that. Okay, Miles Jack. I've been saying for a long time now that the whole thing with Miles Jack is that he is essentially the linebacker version of Rashad Jones. I mean, he runs all over the place. He can play. He's covered people. He's done all these amazing things. He's all over the field. Like, he doesn't have maybe the instincts you would like to see out of a linebacker. Usually he just uses his athleticism to make up for the fact that he can't really predict where everybody's going to be going ahead of time. But if you look at what he can do, just his speed, his power, his ability to chase the guys down, he's all over the field all at once. Like, you can barely look at the camera and not see Miles Jack on the field for UCLA. With that in mind, like, if you have Miles Jack on the board, I'm jumping all over that because the idea of having two Rashad Jones on the field, that's just something I just can't pass up. I mean, the defensive end still is an issue, but Miles Jack, man, what a boost that would be for the defense, for the linebackers.
I agree. Now, say we were able to draft Miles Jack, which I agree. If he's there at 8, you take him. I don't care. To me, that's best player available right there. At a position of huge need. I mean, that's just a perfect matchup. But let's say OV's gone. We didn't keep him. We transition tagged him, say, and he was grabbed, or we let him walk, what have you. What are you doing this year at defensive end? I mean, what are we rolling with? Wake and Fide? I mean, assuming Shelby also left. I'm almost thinking that if you know OV's gone, you got to figure out a way to re-sign Shelby. I don't know that you have an option. Because you got to have somebody you can kind of trust. Agreed?
Bruce Irvin. I think I'm a pass rusher. We're going to be transitioning to 3-4 eventually anyway. Might as well let him get in there. There have been reports that Miami's really interested in him, so I figure, hey, what the hey, let's see what happens.
So draft Miles Jack, sign Bruce Irvin.
And then Paul Soliere, because he wants to come home.
Oh, why not? I mean, I'm all about signing Paul Soliere, but I don't really see him in like the grand scheme of things in this whole thing I've made up in my head, is that the Dolphins are going to do awesome the next two drafts and have this ridiculously sick defense in 3 or 4 years. I'm just going to keep rolling with it till I see it not happen. How about that?
Yeah, I might as well.
All right.
You can keep hoping, I guess, because it's going to require incredible amounts of luck on that draft.
Hey, you're the one that said that Tannenbaum has had some hits on the defensive side.
I did say that, yes, but he's had some hits, not every single hit. Like that's the kind of utopian defense that you're looking for would require him to make everything count, and that's just not realistic.
So when you're comparing him to a singer, you're saying he's not the Beatles. Is he even Bruno Mars? Are we gonna go more with Christina Aguilera?
Okay,
these are really bad euphemism, but horrible, comparisons, by the way. But
what's even not? More horrible is that I know very little about their music. I'm more of a Crush 40 guy myself, but I digress.
I have to say, not to get off football, I have no idea what in the hell is Crush 40. Now I know 100 people just laughed at me when I said that.
No idea what Crush 40 is. No. You'd be maybe literally 100, because that's about as many people still know who they are. I mean,
oh, Crush 40 is a band. I thought maybe it was a type of music.
Yeah, it's a band. It's a band.
Okay, I got you. What is it from, like the 80s, 90s? And people are already like, shut up and talk about football.
Yeah, I know, but I know it's Crush 40 is known for their for the awesome rock music that was in the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise for a very long time. Their music is awesome. I've always liked it, but anyway, we're off topic.
Yeah, I'd say we got way off topic. Save that for the whole video game podcast.
I'll bring on Ethan Hammerman, I guess. I don't know. We can talk about Undertale or something, but anyway.
Okay, so what you're saying is he's had some hits, but he doesn't even have enough hits to bring a greatest hits album.
Yeah, he doesn't have a greatest hits album. I mean, Darrell Revis, David Harris, Nick Mangold, DeBrickashaw Ferguson, Quinton Coples, maybe. He's had hits. I mean, it's not like everybody he's brought in has been a bust, but he's not the superstar of general managers. So, and again, but who is? Like, you brought up Ted Thompson, Ozzie Newsome, and Bill Belichick. I mean, can you name anybody else in the NFL who you can look at and say, yeah, we're good. Doesn't matter.
As far as GM goes?
GMs.
Let me think about it for a second. I'm just trying to think about, Pete Carroll. I mean, I don't know who's really drafting the talent in Seattle. I'm not going to claim to really know that. Somebody, I'm sure, knows that better than I, but doesn't Pete Carroll really have control of the talent over there? I think he does.
Well, if he does, that means he can just kind of pick and choose who works best for what he wants to do. That's kind of like what Adam Gase is going to be able to do. He has final say over the 53-man roster, but he's not the one in charge of bringing in
I don't know. I think Pete Carroll might, and here's why I think that. If I recall correctly, you remember when we were drafting 12th or 13th in, it might have been 2010 or 11. The year we traded down, and when we got Audric and Meese, and we ended up getting Audric and Meese in that draft. Do you remember the season I'm talking about?
No, but continue.
You remember that happening though, right?
I remember Audric and Meese being drafted. But
okay, well, we traded down. We needed safety, bad, and Earl Thomas was sitting there staring at us, slapping us in the face.
I heard that story. Yes.
Yes, and we traded down, and I remember Pete Carroll saying when we were sitting, and Seattle drafted the position after us. And I remember Pete Carroll saying, so I was sitting there waiting, knowing that Miami was going to take Earl Thomas. And when they traded down, And I guess whoever we traded to did not draft Earl Thomas. I just couldn't believe it. So we went with Earl Thomas. Now, that doesn't mean that he had control of it. I just kind of thought that he spoke as if he did. Now, here's another name, too. Jeff Fisher. Yes, I know that that the Rams have not been great, but he has drafted some really good players. I don't know why they don't seem to put it all together.
Because he sucks.
I guess so. But he has, but and I know for a fact that talking, he has talent.
But
he
you're
has
talking
control
GM
of the players.
But
there.
You're talking GM coaches. You're talking about guys who not only uses the groceries but he buys them too. I'm talking about just like GMs in general. Like other than Ted Thompson and Ozzie Newsome, how many people do you know that buy the groceries for their teams and ball and the players ball out and do things every year? Because Bill Belichick brings in his own groceries. Chip Kelly last year brought in his own groceries. It didn't work, but he did. Yeah, but again, exactly. That's my point. Is that your examples are guys who like they bring in their own groceries and then use them themselves, not like pure GMs. That's like Ozzie Newsome and Ted Thompson. So
okay, well,
other than them, like look around.
I'm done making excuses about for every position. Well, they can't be all Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Well, they can't be all Ted Thompson and Ozzie Newsome. Well, they can't all be Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll. Oh, so then go find, then keep going rule. Through guys till you find those guys. I'm tired of hearing that. Oh, well, they can't always be top five, so we'll just settle for the crap we have and keep losing. I mean, oh, I'm done. I'm done making those excuses, honestly. I know it's rare to get the Ted Thompsons. All these players, these coaches, these GMs we're talking about, I know it's rare, but you got to keep cycling through until you do it. I mean, that's just my opinion, not just know that you don't have it. Oh, we know this guy's kind of average, but we're going to keep him around anyway at any position, player or coach or GM.
Bill Belichick sucked with the Browns. Pete Carroll.
That's true. Yeah, he wasn't great. And he was such a system guy back then, too. He totally changed his philosophy when he went to New England. In Cleveland, he was straight up, I am a system guy. I don't care who my players are. He was like Chip Kelly 1.0 before there was Chip Kelly. This is my system, and everyone's going to play that. And if you can't figure out my system, you're gone. Now he's more of a, let me bring in talent and make this work. And that's when he started winning.
And that's the mentality that Adam Gase is going to supposedly bring in. Now, with that said, I don't think you can call it an excuse, Ron, because I mean, like I keep saying, if it was that easy, every team would do it. But you don't see every team firing coaches every year and firing and hiring GMs every year. If the vision was different,
Cleveland and Oakland,
and where are they now?
Sucking.
I mean, with all due respect to Derek Carr, I mean, he's a young gunslinger, and eventually, I don't know if he'll follow the path his brother did, and he's good, but like, okay, hooray, Derek Carr is good. Is he going to be great? We don't know that yet either.
No,
like,
it's true. Everybody, it's true. We don't know that.
It's gotten to the point in the NFL where Kirk Cousins is going to be making millions of dollars. I think he's getting the franchise tag. Did they finally decide they were going to tag him?
You like that? I have no idea. I don't know. I think they'd be crazy not to. But
okay. I think they finally decided to tag him. But it's like the fact that they were even considering a long term deal for a dude who's literally had one half, not even a full good season, one half of a good season in his whole career. And mind you, RG3 was kind of already out of the Redskins' plans a year and a half into his career there. So Kirk Cousins has had quite a while to already try to work his way into the system, try to find ways to do things. Jay Gruden started with Kirk Cousins in mind for the starting role, if I'm correct. And even then, Kirk Cousins was never all that impressive. And Nick Foles had one really good year under Chip Kelly, and then he left and he decided that he wasn't going to be Nick Foles anymore. No, I take it back. He was with the Eagles one more year, correct?
Who, Nick Foles?
Yes. He had his good year, and then he played again.
And then he had a crappy year. He definitely didn't have
the
year
that,
with Philly.
The same team.
And then the next year he was traded, swap for swap there, Bradford for Knowles.
Yeah, and it failed for both teams. So, but that's my point, Ron, is that you're saying that, well, and not everybody can be this guy. It's the truth. I mean, people are so thirsty for success that the moment they see even a glimmer of hope, they think, well, that's it. We've got our guy, because they know how hard it is. So they grasp onto the final thing. You don't know for sure until you see sustained success over a long period of time. If Bill Belichick had 2 years of success and then the Patriots fell off the face of the earth, we wouldn't be saying, well, not everybody can be Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick would just be another one of those lightning in a bottle success stories that never really came back. But Bill Belichick got his time. He managed to sustain his success. Getting success is not nearly as hard as sustaining it. You have to keep changing. You have to keep making changes to your philosophy. You have to make sure you get lucky with the absolute. The Patriots are a constant lottery. They had the best coach in football, one of the best quarterbacks in all of football as well. That's the lottery right there. Congratulations, New England. You won the lottery. The Packers, Aaron Rodgers and maybe Mike McCarthy. I don't know if he's considered one of the best in the league. I think he was on the hot seat for a while. But even then, it's like, if Mike McCarthy's on the hot seat, then it's like, sheesh, what are you looking for? You are looking for that next Bill Belichick. You are looking for that next guy. And they don't exist. Like, people were mad that Mike Tannenbaum was going to be in charge this year. Oh, I'm looking around. I'm like, who do you want instead?
Hey, they do. There's no one. They do exist. We got him. It's Adam Gase.
Yeah, but well, yeah. Well,
I'm sorry. I just had to say that because people have been saying. I'm not saying he won't be, but come on. Let's let him. You know, install
first.
One play. Yeah, let's let him call one play in one game first before we start calling him the next Bill Belichick.
Yeah, yeah. But that's my. But again, it's like the point remains. It's like if you don't hit the lottery, you're not going to succeed. There are a lot of teams in the NFL. I went through my list of Super Bowls. Like I went through to see if defense still wins championships. I wrote that column. It's like, but that means a lot of teams have never even won a Super Bowl. I don't think Buffalo never won one.
Cleveland's never won one.
More than half the teams in the NFL have never even gotten to the Super Bowl, let alone won one. So, like, it's pretty much just this idea of, well, these guys just happen to have these smart people in place and finding other smart people to help turn this franchise around. That's insanely difficult.
Difficult, but I think it's people who make decisions make bad decisions. That's personally my opinion. How many teams past, including Miami, didn't draft Aaron Rodgers? Bad decision.
Okay, bad decision.
Miami when we interviewed Tomlin and we thought he was too hip hop or whatever for Miami? Bad decision. These are just bad decisions, man.
Well, Mike Tomlin coached elsewhere before he got to Pittsburgh, right?
I don't know exactly when in the throw of things that Miami said no to Tomlin. I thought it was the same year he went to Pittsburgh, but I could be wrong on that. It might have been before.
I think Tomlin coached somewhere else first, and he wasn't all that great there either. So, again, it's like...
He's a good coach, and we made up a stupid reason not to hire him.
He's a good coach now. He's a good coach now. Like, Bill Belichick is a good coach now. Back up then, he was not. Somebody decided to take a chance on a retread and say, well, let's see what he does. And he just happened to be the one that changed his ways. Mike Tomlin, maybe he changed his ways. I don't know much about Mike Tomlin's past other than what he does in Pittsburgh now, because I didn't follow football this closely that far back. So I have to learn a lot more about the history of football. But... my point is that people are saying, well, this person, we should look for somebody else to take charge. And I'm like, all I can sit here and say is that if you don't like what's there now, who would you like? People always say, well, let's change it to what? Because if you can't name somebody who could do the job better, that means you literally just have so much disdain for what's there now that you don't care what's there. You would rather have the water boy be in charge of the Dolphins. So, but is that a realistic option? Is that realistic option? No. Do you honestly believe that would be better? I hope not, because it's not as easy as people try to say. Look for a new head coach. Okay, I'm looking around. Oh, there's this guy maybe, but there's gonna be 31 other teams competing for him. So, well, I guess we're going to have to give it a shot. And if we lose, oh, well, we're going to have to wait the next 10 years. Mike Tannenbaum, for all intents and purposes, is the best we could possibly have done right this minute, short of stealing Ozzie Newsome, like kidnapping the man and making him sign a contract saying he resigns as Baltimore's GM and signing Miami. It's not that easy. There's nobody else around.
I get it. No, I understand. But then you can't sure as heck go around making decisions or in my opinion, I don't think that the team does this, but I don't understand the philosophy of wanting the team to just stick with what's decent or good, because I don't think you can do better. I don't want that. I want you to go for it all, make the best decisions, Do it like you think Ted Thompson or Ozzie Newsome would do, and if you fall on your face and you suck, we'll fire you and we'll find new people. I mean, simple as that. Don't just, we're not shooting for 8-8. You're shooting for Super Bowl.
Yeah, but Ron, they're not robots. These are real people. Like, I've met these guys in the front office. I liked Dennis Hickey a lot as a person. I felt bad for him that he got canned. I kind of still feel bad for Joe Philbin that he got canned. If he wasn't good at his job, I understand that he needed to go. But these guys are looking to keep their jobs. They have a livelihood. They have a family they need to do, and they're doing the best that they can. So it's like I cannot in good conscience endorse the idea of, well, if you suck for 1 year, we're going to fire you. Sucks to be you. Moving on.
Yeah, I'm not saying for 1 year. This will be Tannenbaum's third year with the team. I got one. I'm glad you brought up Philbin, because I had a thought in my head a day or two ago. I was reading something about how Adam Gase has made a concerted effort to reach out to every single player and have conversations either over the phone or face-to-face with just about everybody currently on the team, and how I don't recall who wrote the article, honestly, to tell you the truth, but it might have been something from Bleacher Report or something in a name I don't recognize, how they said that's just such opposite of what Philbin would do because he was just kind of closed off.
Are you about to bring up how Philbin decided that this year he was going to try and be friends with his players?
No, this has nothing to do with Philbin. This has nothing to do with Philbin. My only thought is I hope that Adam Gase is doing that, because that is his natural way in what he does, and not doing it because Tannenbaum and Ross said, you know, Philbin's failure was ABCD, so you better go do the opposite. I don't want Gase coming in and doing the opposite of Philbin does. I want Gase coming in and being Gase. So I'm wondering which it is, because I like it if that's just Gase. That's the way he is. That's the way he's always been. Or he's just doing it because Philbin did the opposite, so I better go in and do this, or we're gonna fail. I hate that. That never works. Not just on football teams, but in business in general. When the new CEO comes in and tries to do everything the opposite of the old CEO, fall on your face. You come in and you do you, then you got a chance to succeed. Agree or disagree?
Well, it depends on what doing you is all about. Like, and that's actually something of a red trigger for me. Like the I'm a do me kind of philosophy, because if you're doing the wrong thing, then no, I don't want you to do you.
Well, then you shouldn't be there if that's the case.
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of like Cam Newton and breaking rules and all that stuff. Like the rules don't apply to me because I'm Cam Newton. Kind of.
No, I'm not referring to breaking rules.
Yeah. I know.
Philosophy. Philosophy of coaching in this case.
Yeah, I know what you meant. It was just the way you worded it is like a red trigger for me. But anyway, I digress. If that's what Adam Gase is doing, then I would think that it's more along the lines of he said when he came in, I want to take the best of what the players I have here are and use them to the best of their ability. In order to do that, you have to know what these players are made of. You have to know you have to know how these players tick. You have to know what Ryan Tannehill is good at. You have to know what Devontae Parker can do. You have to know what Jordan Cameron is best suited for. So if you're going to do that, then yeah, you talk to these players, you watch their film. It's like, let me see. He was at his best when, and then you make them do that. If that's what Gase is doing, then absolutely. But if you're doing it just because to be the opposite, well, sometimes doing the opposite is what you need to do. But it shouldn't be like it shouldn't come at the cost of trying things your way first.
I agree. That's the only thing I'm wondering, and I'm definitely, trust me, I'm definitely overthinking this. But it's February. Training camp doesn't start till the end of July, so I'm overthinking everything, like all Dolphins fans are doing and all football fans are doing right now, I suppose. Because I have to fill this show at least an hour, and I need crap to talk about. That's what I'm doing. I'm just kidding. That's what I'm doing right now. But hey, I know you got to get out of here in a little bit because you got some stuff going on this evening. Anything else you'd like to add, say, talk about before we go? The floor is yours.
All I would say is that, like, I want people to have a real wait and see mentality, because there are a lot of people who claim to be wait and see, and yet they're condemning everything the Dolphins do before they even like get a chance to see how it works. Like, I was having conversations with somebody the other night about how, well, Mike Tannenbaum is already sucking. He's going to do the same things in the New York Jets. He's already going to suck. This season is a failure, but I'm going to wait and see. Like, that's not a wait and see mentality.
That's
going to suck mentality.
That's I'm going to wait and see them suck mentality. That's right. Not I'm going to wait and see what happens.
Right. Wait and see what happens means that you are neutral to the whole thing. You're looking at things objectively and saying, okay, let's see how this could work. Because if you are so convinced that the person is there is going to suck, then you don't really wait. You're not really in a wait and see mode. You're in a wait until they get fired, and then we can do this whole process all over again mentality.
Well, I tell you what, this is where I'm at. I'm in a wait and see mode. I'm going to wait and see them do what I think they should do. That is the most ridiculous thing ever uttered, but that is the truth. That is where I'm at.
Okay, so what do you think they should do then? And if they do it, does that mean you're done waiting and seeing?
No, not necessarily. Then I'm going to wait and see if I was right. But what I'm saying is I'm going to wait and see if they build this team the correct way and stop just going out and trying to hit home runs in free agency. That's my number one thing. Right before that, I don't know. Then number two, in the draft, I'm going to wait and see if they really do try and build this defense really strong through the draft. That's the number two thing. And that's really all I have right now is just free agency in the draft. I mean, what the heck else is there? So I'm going to wait and see on those things to see if they do it. Then if they were to kind of go with the philosophy I'm hoping they go with, then I will wait and see if I was right and if it actually starts to work. and if not, just trying to hit home runs in free agency every single year or pull off the big trade every single year that it seems we've done for years and years now, because obviously that's not working. So there you go. That's the wait and see I am. Wait and see if they do what I think they should do.
All I'm saying with this is that I am neutral to everything that they do. I'm not going to applaud. I'm going to say, I like this move or I don't like this move, but I'm not going to condemn until I actually see it succeed or fail. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you're much more level-headed than me, Lewis. I think we all know that by now.
That's why they love you, Ron.
Oh, yeah, they love me. They love me, or they hate me. Trust me. With every Ron, I really love your show. It's awesome. When are you doing again? I also get the text, the DMs, I hope you die in a tire fire. Jeez. Somebody said that to me one time.
Wow.
It was awesome. Block. Yeah, it was actually kind of funny. I showed people, look what somebody messaged me on Twitter. Isn't that great?
Like, you must be doing something right.
Yes, I'm doing something right. But I think maybe I just felt like they were lashing out towards the Dolphins, and I was just there, you know? I was there to be a sounding board, I guess.
Yeah, you're just there because, like, you're unsquish the fish. No, squish the fish. Oh!
Yeah, I get slack for that name sometimes. Oh, that name's just derogatory. Well, aren't we trying to unsquish the fish? Isn't that the whole point?
They're already squished.
Exactly. That's why we have to unsquish them. All right, man. Why don't you give us all the places that people can follow you, read you, listen to you, and whatnot.
Alrighty then. My website is finmaniacs.com. You can tweet the website at finmaniacs, or you can tweet directly to me at FLSportDebater. That's my personal Twitter handle. I'm Lewis D. Sung on there if you want to look for that instead. Every day on the website we're writing up new columns, new film reviews, new articles on the daily news of the Miami Dolphins. We're always making sure to keep things updated, and every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock we have another live podcast that you can call in and you can chat with us. We usually have guests on. I'm trying to see if I can get OJ McDuffie to come on with us. We've been trying to work it out, but stuff has been like in the way.
But you had Channing Crowder last week.
Yeah, we had Channing Crowder was a lot of fun. I mean, if you haven't listened to that show, I really think you should tune in and see that, because we always have our shows archived. We're working on getting it on iTunes. It's already been approved for Stitcher, so all you Android users can use that. Did it
not approve for iTunes yet? Because they're usually faster than Stitcher.
No, they haven't approved for iTunes yet. I'm still waiting for a confirmation email from those people. So, I mean, woohoo, I guess, whatever. Okay. But the Channing Crowder interview was amazing. He brought in a lot of insight. He brought in a lot of interesting things that it actually made me think about things. So if anybody wants to listen to that, you can check it out and learn some things. Channing knows his football.
All right. Awesome. And as for me, what I got going on right now, obviously we're doing the shows. I'm also doing a little draft series where we're going over each position one by one on each episode. I'm doing that with Matthew Knowles from FinManiacs. And we'll be doing that leading up to the draft, hitting each one. You could find me on Twitter at UnsquishTheFish. That's the best place to find me. I also have a Facebook-like page. Unsquish the Fish, but I really only post on there when I release a show. That's it. I'm not beyond that. I don't really do much communication on there. If you message me, I'll answer it, but it'll probably take me 10 times as long to answer that as it would if you just got on, you know, found me on Twitter.
That's a great endorsement there, Rob.
Yeah, I'm just no, the endorsement is find me on Twitter. If you want to keep up with the show, just get on Twitter. If you want to just casually maybe check out an episode here and there and you want the slow information, then go to Facebook. That's pretty much the way it works. Soon, my new home, as I'm recording this, it's not, but possibly by the time you hear this, my new home will be on Blog Talk Radio, but you'll still be able to hear me on Stitcher and iTunes and pretty much all the places you're finding me now. You'll be able to find me, but as well, I'm going to be transitioning to Blog Talk Radio very shortly this coming week, and I appreciate
everything.
Yeah, I will be doing the shows just like I could do them now. I'll be recording them ahead of time and uploading, but then I will also be adding in some live shows. I don't know exactly how often or when yet. I will let you know as I make those decisions. And some shows you guys will be able to call in on and whatnot. All right, guys, everybody, thanks for listening to my very disorganized show, much like my house and my office at work. My show is also extremely disorganized, but I appreciate you listening. Have a great day, guys, and Fin's up.